This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast. Broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, the plight of Lebanon continues. Israel continues to occupy this land, and of course they continue to occupy the West Bank of Palestine, and as well as the Gaza Strip, and their incredible brutality and humanity continues, and the world remains practically silent at this atrocity of justice. Today I'm going to continue, and there's no better way to talk about what's happening in the Middle East right now than to talk about my book, Jewish Supremacism, and give you the audio version, because today we're going to begin with Chapter 9, which is Israel, a Jewish supremacist state. We have three chapters in Jewish supremacism on Israel, which I think are very critically important to understanding the nature of Zionism and the nature of Jewish extremism. So here we go. Chapter 9, Israel, a Jewish supremacist state. I begin with three fascinating quotes. The first from President Harry S. Truman when he was under pressure to recognize the newly announced Zionist state in Israel. Quote, Jesus Christ couldn't please them when he was here on earth, so how could anyone expect that I would have any luck? Next from Hillel Halkin, for all disappointments, Israel is who we are, uncamouflaged and unadorned. And American Jews must have the courage to declare openly that they have a double loyalty to the country in which they live and to the state of Israel. The Jew must not let himself be talked into merely being a good patriot of a country in which he lives. In the Zionist movement's new campaign to conquer the communities of the free diaspora, the government of Israel will give every moral and political support to the limits of its capacity. Here we go. As I delved deeper into the Jewish question and Zionism, attempting to get a clear understanding of this enigmatic people, I realized that exploring the foundations and policies of the modern nation of Israel would answer some of my questions. For the first time in over 2,000 years, Jews had their own sovereign state, a nation created entirely in their own image. By the time I began my inquiry, it was obvious to me that the press and the entertainment industry were very pro-Israel. They had induced in me an early prejudice in favor of Israel. I now noticed that the reporters covering the stories for the TV networks and for the major newspapers are usually Jewish. Suspecting that much of my pro-Israel sentiment had come from biased sources, I sought to learn the indisputed basics of the Mideast conflict, and I first turned to my encyclopedias. I found in my encyclopedias information similar to what one will find today in the Israel article in the very popular Encarta Encyclopedia. And I quote, of the more than 800,000 Arabs who lived in Israeli-held territory before 1948, only about 170,000 remained. The rest became refugees in surrounding Arab countries. In 1948, the year the Israeli nation was set up, more than three-fourths of the entire Palestinian population living in the Israeli-held territory had become refugees. According to Encarta, 630,000 people were no longer able to dwell in their homes and to work on the land where their families had lived for thousands of years. Since then, Israel expanded its borders in the wars of 56, 67, and 73, and in the Lebanon invasion of 1982, creating hundreds of thousands of additional Palestinian refugees. Would people voluntarily leave their homes, their businesses, their farms? I ask myself. Would they freely choose to live as penniless, stateless people in squalid refugee camps? Obviously, the Zionists had driven them from their homes and property, and furthermore, the expulsion had obviously been intentional, for the Palestinians were forbidden to return to their homes after the fighting ended. While in high school, I wrote to a Palestinian information organization in Washington, D.C., and asked for some books giving their side of the Israeli-Arab conflict. From them and the libraries, I obtained many well-documented sources, including some amazing Zionist ones, that gave a very different answer to the Mideast question than what I got in my media. I learned that the fledgling Israeli government had passed regulations forbidding the expelled Palestinians from returning to their homes and property. They also enacted a special law that deemed this Arab property, quote, abandoned, unquote, and subject to confiscation without compensation. The Nazis of Hitler's Reich could not have disposed of the problem with any more cold-blooded efficiency. I checked the figures compiled by the British Census in 1922. At that time, Jews accounted for only 10% of the population. In the last census, taken the year before the establishment of Israel, Jews made up only about half of the population within the area that subsequently became Israel. The Palestinians then owned 93.5% of the land. The facts were inescapable and damning. Zionist immigrants had forced their way into Palestine against the wishes of the inhabitants, and then, through the weight of arms and terror, had driven the residents from their homes, robbing them of their land and possessions. The facts could not be any more plain. The Zionists, with help from their cohorts all over the world, had stolen a whole nation, the nation called Israel. No equivocation. No mountain of pro-Israeli propaganda, no playing of Exodus on the radio, and no replay of millions of feet of Hollywood films showing Arabs as brutal terrorists and Jews as innocent victims. None of this could change the obvious and inescapable facts. The pro-Israeli propaganda I read suggested that Palestine was essentially an empty country. Tell that to the more than 1 million people who have been driven out since 1948. Zionist leaders understood from the beginning that Israel was going to be acquired by colonization and conquest. The dedicated Zionist leader, Vladimir Jabotinsky, makes this clear in his 1923 book, The Iron Wall, We and the Arabs. Quote, Zionist colonization must either be terminated or carried out against the wishes of the native population, an iron wall, to resist the pressure of the native population. A voluntary reconciliation with the Arabs is out of the question, for without an armed force, colonization is impossible. Zionism is a colonization adventure. It is important to speak Hebrew, but more important to be able to shoot. Israel was born of the Holocaust, but it was sired thousands of years before then. For at least 2,000 years, Jews prayed, next year in Jerusalem. And until the middle of the 20th century, such prayer was only a religious metaphor. Then, dramatically, in 1948, the possibility of next year in Jerusalem became a possibility for every Jew in the world. The political machinations of the Zionist state are testimony to the cohesive and pervasive Jewish power in the West. In its operation, Israel lives as testimony to the very supremacist nature of both Judaism and its partly secular son, Zionism. Jewish messianic tradition goes back as far as the recorded history. Even when the Jews were one of the smallest tribes in the Middle East, they fashioned a faith that designated themselves a special people, a chosen people, a people who were promised to rule the world. These messianic intentions are not paranoid delusions of anti-Semites, but are written plainly in their own Hebraic scriptures, and since that time they have been dutifully appended even to the present day. Compare the following biblical quotation to the messianic words of Israel's first prime minister, David Ben Gurion. And I quote, and this is from Jubilees 32:18-19, "And kings shall come from you and shall rule wherever the foot of the sons of man has trodden. I shall give you your seed, all the earth which is under heaven, and they shall rule over all the nations according to their desire, and afterwards they shall draw the whole earth to themselves and shall inherit it forever." In Look magazine, in 1962, Ben-Gurion stated his prediction for the next 25 years. The prediction of amazing prescience was this, quote, "The image of the world in 1987, as traced in my imagination, the Cold War will be a thing of the past. Internal pressure on the constantly growing intelligentsia in Russia may lead to a gradual democratization of the Soviet Union. On the other hand, transform the United States into a welfare state with a planned economy. With the exception of the USSR as a federated Eurasian state, all other continents will become united in a world alliance, at whose disposal will be an international police force. All armies will be abolished. There will be no more wars. In Jerusalem, the United Nations, a truly united nations, will build a shrine of the prophets to serve the federated union of all continents. And this will be the seat of the Supreme Court of mankind." Unquote. Many people are amazed to discover that most Jews in Israel are non-religious, just as was their first great leader, David Ben Gurion. However, these mostly atheistic Jews tolerate a religious state. Apparently, Jews who have no belief in God support Judaism as a state-sponsored institution that preserves both Jewish culture and the Jewish genotype. Other than a few intolerant fanatics, the Jewish Orthodox institutions allow a wide range of religious belief, from atheism to forms of the occult called Kabbalism. Only the Talmud could have a passage where a rabbi claims to have argued with God and then defeated him. To Jewish orthodoxy, biblical and theological interpretations may vary greatly as long as Jewish tradition and Jewish heritage is scrupulously preserved. Next section is God a Zionist. Now, Israel supports its claim on Palestinian land by saying that God gave it to the Jews. A corollary secular argument is that the remote ancestors of the Jewish people lived 2,000 years ago on parts of what is now Israel. They argue with a straight face that this gives them the right to take that land away from whoever has lived on the land during the intervening years. Now, that argument is much like saying that because the Romans had ruled the Mediterranean 2,000 years ago, the Italians now have the right to conquer the entire Mediterranean basin and drive out three-fourths of its population. Furthermore, the Jewish people cannot claim that they were the first people dwelling in the Promised Land. The Bible clearly records Jewish invasions and genocide in the region. The Palestinian people are descended from the same peoples who lived in the area before the Jewish conquests. If the claim that whoever lived on the land first has the rightful claim, then the Palestinians should have the primary claim to the land because many of their ancestors lived on that same land long before ancient Israel even existed. The allegation that Jewish rule over Palestine today is God-ordained poses a more difficult question, especially for contemporary Christians. It is difficult because the Jewish power brokers have been able to completely change 2,000 years of Christian interpretation of the Bible. Servile Judeo-Christian preachers have made alliances with the Zionists because of their media power. They quote liberally from Old Testament verses that proclaim a covenant between God and the Israelites that bequeaths the land referred to as Israel to the Jews. The Christian Church of our fathers, though, from its earliest history up to recent times, has always refuted that claim. Christian scholars, from the writers of the New Testament itself to the midpoint of the 20th century, pointed out that the Bible makes it very clear that all promises made by God are conditional upon continued faithfulness. God says clearly in the Old Testament that if the Israelites reject him, he will requite them. The New Testament emphatically makes the point that the Jewish nation, by rejecting God and his Son, has dissolved the Old Testament. New Testament scriptures quote God as making a new covenant with a new promise of salvation of Christ for all. As I previously quoted, the scriptures cannot possibly be any more explicit than in Hebrews 8:10, in which God says very clearly that the Jews are no longer in the covenant he made in the Old Testament. Quote, "Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord." Unquote. Is it any wonder that Jews reject the New Testament and that Israel forbids even quoting it in their schools? Government-funded groups in Israel have even organized public burnings of the New Testament, and Israeli laws provide for criminal prosecution and 5-year imprisonment for Christians who seek to convert Jews. It seems quite odd, in the light of these facts, that many denominations of the Christian Church are now busily adopting the view that Jews are still today the chosen people. It is understandable that supremacist Jews who reject Christ and the New Testament would say that God sanctions their terror against the Palestinian people, but it is scandalous that Christians could possibly support them in this bloody adventure. Many of those who suffered from the Zionist onslaught were in fact Christian Palestinians. Israel's crimes have significantly hurt the many Christians among the Palestinian people. The fact that some Christian leaders lend moral and financial support to a nation that hates and oppresses Christians is testimony to the penetration and subversion of Zionist power and influence, even into the highest councils of various Christian denominations. In doing so, they have undermined the Christian faith in the entire Mideast, and indeed in the entire world. The Israeli claim that God gave them the land of Israel is ludicrous when one considers that at least 3/4 of Israelis don't even believe in God in the first place. Israeli government statistics say 85% do not believe in God. Now, how can a God that they do not believe in promise them land that belongs to others? Far from being a religious promise, Israel's creation came not from divine intervention, but from Zionist intrigue that began during the First World War. And in the next section, we will discuss the Balfour Declaration and its impact on Israel and its impact upon American participation in World War I. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being with me. A very interesting show, and we're getting deep into the foundation of the State of Israel. And Israel offers for all of us a perfect example of the inner nature of Zionism and Jewish extremism. Thanks so much for your support, for your ongoing work in spreading this work around the world. Thanks so much. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.